You're listening to Lead Speak Grow with your host, Dr. Makisha Mullins, also known as Dr. Mac. Lead Speak Grow is a space curated for those ready to take the lead in their lives, speak a truth that affirms them in their purpose, and places them on a path of continuous growth. This is a safe space where I have real conversations with guests about life challenges and how they've overcome them. I hope you are inspired to lead, speak, and grow today and every day forward. Thank you for listening to the Lead Speak Grow podcast with Dr. Makisha Mullins. Be sure you follow Lead Speak Grow with your podcast carrier. This episode is sponsored by BuyEmpowered.com. Make BuyEmpowered your new favorite brand. BuyEmpowered.com offers high quality, comfortable t-shirts, hoodies, and more. We want you to dress confidently, feel free to be yourself, and buy empowered. Shop BuyEmpowered.com. Thank you for joining me for this part of the journey. I am Dr. Mac, your host, and today I have a returning guest here with me today, Mr. Tim Austin. I spoke with him about his other book before, but he has a new book that's out now. And as you may recall, he is a leadership player coach and four-time Amazon best-selling author. With his latest independently published book, Where Jump Shots Meet Jesus. And that's what our discussion is about today. He has a bachelor's degree in English, a master's in business management, where he is an alum of Hampton Institute, now university, and has attended Capella University in the management space. He is the father to one beloved daughter, cherished Morgan, who is a university student studying sports management at Troy University and currently lives in northern Alabama. So I just want to say welcome again to my guest, Mr. Tim Austin.
Thank you.
The prolific author, Tim Austin.
Thank you, Dr. Mac. It's a pleasure to see you again. And I always enjoy our conversations, either formally or informally. And I'm looking forward to sharing our fire with your audience.
It's great. I think this this book has a very interesting way of talking about the ministry of Jesus and what it looks like in the modern age, right? We're going to get into it more, but if you would just kind of share with me first, kind of preface what led to you writing this book, Where Jump Shots Meet Jesus. What prompted this?
You know, Dr. Mack, you and I have gotten along well on everything except for one subject. And that is who are our favorite basketball teams. And so I hate to start this conversation off in controversy. However, I have been a basketball junkie for a long time. And I've also been a junkie of the Bible for a long time. And I just believed that those worlds were not dissimilar, but they kind of came together. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, they came together by three different isolated occasions, but they came together. The first one, back in 1989, I was sitting in a barbershop and I happened to pick up a copy of Esquire magazine. And at the end of that decade, they generally ask celebrities, you know, what's going to be, what are your forecasts for the new decade? And one of the questions they asked was, well, what is the book that we need to be reading? And they asked Spike Lee. Naturally, he said Malcolm X, because 2 years later, his movie came out on Malcolm X. But they also asked a rising TV star named Oprah Winfrey. And she said, the Bible. And she said, because every question that man has ever posed has already been answered in that book. And I said, whoa, I had never been an Oprah fan, but that statement kind of hooked me. I said, wow, I agreed with that statement, but I never thought of it in that context. And then several years later, I was at a lecture at Oakwood University in Huntsville, Alabama, and a friend of mine, a colleague, a Dr. John Nixon Sr., was lecturing theology majors. And in his lecture, he said to them, as they were about to become future pastors, he said to them that Jesus Christ is located in every single verse in the Bible. And then he pointed them and said, if you don't find him in that verse, then don't preach that verse. I said, whoa, that got my attention. But the third and final piece came last, I would say probably in December of 2022. I had been scribbling some notes about a book. I said, there've got to be some parallels between the Bible and basketball, sports and spirituality. And I went to my bank, my Synovus Bank here in Huntsville, and I went to my banker and I said, I need to get a Square. A Square is that little device that you put on your phone that you can take debit and credit card purchases. I'd just been taking cash and or Cash App before that time. And in the course of our conversation, you know, I mentioned the fact I was coming up with this new book. And she paused and she said, wow, Tim, you do know that basketball was invented at a YMCA gymnasium. I said, oh, I had forgotten that. I mean, I'm from Massachusetts. I mean, I'm a New Englander, you know, like you are now. And I've been to the Basketball Hall of Fame twice. And I knew that, but I had forgotten that. And I said, wow. I said, do you realize the fact that our whole conversation has been made by these last 7 seconds? I said, to remember and to realize the fact that the game of basketball was invented in a gymnasium for the Young Men's Christian Association, YMCA. I said, that's all the alley-oop I need. That became the alley-oop for this book. And I said, it, even when I still think about it now, Dr. Mack, it blows me away. And so I said to myself, wow. I said, well, what other parallels might there be between the basketball and the Bible? So I just took a wild guess and I said, are there any parallels between the originator of basketball and the originator of Christianity? And I said, okay, the originator of basketball is James Naismith, and the originator of Christianity is Jesus. So I said, wait a minute. I've got James of Naismith family, and I've got Jesus of Nazareth. I said, okay, keep going. I'm a wordsmith. I said, keep going. So I said, Naismith came to this country from Canada as a foreigner. The Bible tells me Jesus came to this earth fully God, but fully human. So he came as a foreigner. I said, okay. I said, keep rolling. I said, Naismith got hired by the Springfield, Massachusetts YMCA as both a chaplain providing pastoral care and as a physical education instructor. I said, well, Jesus came to this earth as to provide pastoral care, like a chaplain. And the Bible says everywhere he went with his disciples, he walked. So I said, that's physical education, and that's education. And I said, I always wondered what his Fitbit probably said at the end of the day. So I said, well, I said, keep rolling. Basketball got invented, as you are learning this winter, Dr. Mack, with those severe New England winters. The director of the YMCA in Springfield told James Naismith, you need to invent some kind of activity for these young boys, these young boisterous, these rowdies, he called them, to come inside and play. Jesus, on the other hand, the Bible tells us, prayed all night long to the Father to get his disciples. And he ended up picking up for all night of prayer. He ended up picking up, you know, a bunch of rowdies, you know, a bunch of hotheads, you know, like Peter. Yes. And he picked the sons of thunder, James and John. He picked a white collar tax cheat in Matthew. You know, he picked one whose first name everybody knew him as the doubter. He picked one also known as the betrayer. He picked a group of rowdies himself. So out of that group of rowdies, Naismith invented the game of basketball. And for Jesus, out of that group of rowdies, he turned them into and turned them out, what I call Team Jesus, into creating the world's largest religion, Christianity, which has 2.56 billion people. And so I said, wow. So then I just kept rolling and rolling and rolling. And so that's what started the book. And the more I began to think about basketball, the more I began to think about the fact that as a basketball fan, I knew the fact that, you know, there had been, let's say, 8 teams that have won 1 championship. There have been 7 teams that have won 2 championships. But Dr. Mack, I have a fixation on the Bible, and the Bible has a fixation on the number 3. Just like the number 7, 3 symbolizes perfection, completion, and wholeness. So therefore, I created the definition. We always hear sports guys talking about a dynasty. To me, I define a dynasty as any NBA franchise that has won 3 championships in the least amount of time. Either that's three in a row or three in 4 years. And when I do it that way, there are five teams that I highlight that are NBA dynasties. This is going to break my heart, but I'm going to say it. Okay.
Say it. Say it.
Okay. It's the 1950s and 1960s Boston Celtics, led by Bill Russell. Moment of silence. Thank you.
Okay. Next. What's the next one?
Quit rushing. It is the 1980s Magic Johnson-led Los Angeles Lakers.
Showtime team.
I didn't need that commentary. It is the 1990s Scottie Pippen, not Michael Jordan-led Chicago Bulls. It is the 2000s Kobe Bryant-led Lakers.
Lakers are on this list twice.
Yeah, only because of the facts.
Okay, just want to make sure that that's there.
Only because of the facts. I didn't allow myself to be confused by the facts. Dr. Mac, Lady Laker. And then the fifth and final franchise are the 2010 and 2020s Steph Curry-led Golden State Warriors. Now, I mentioned the names of those five individuals because whether they know it or not, they mimic the leadership style of Jesus Christ. And what I mean is Jesus said to his disciples, I came to serve, not to be served. Each of the guys that I named were top scorers in high school, top scorers in college. But when they came to the pros, their coaches said to them, look, I know you can score, but what I need you to do instead of scoring is get the ball to my scorers. And if you get the ball to them, they will score. We will win, but we'll do more than win. We'll win championship after championship after championship. So Bill Russell then backed off of his game, even though his major game was defense, and he created scoring opportunities for guys who made the Hall of Fame. Magic Johnson, the same thing. Scottie Pippen, the same thing. Steph Curry ultimately would do the same thing. So they became servant leaders like Jesus. And in all of my research, Dr. Mack, in terms of the NBA and in terms of this dynamic, we often talk about the athlete, the high profile athlete as the scorer, this, that, but we never ever talk about them as a servant leader. Those five are servant leaders. They created the secret formula that says from here on out, the teams that will win dynasties will be teams that are led by servant leaders. And that is the gist of the book.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of things you said there I want to kind of ask about. Maybe push back, especially when you say the Bulls.
Yes.
Now, if you say the Bulls, like the Bulls are synonymous with MJ.
Yes.
Right? And we think undoubtedly of MJ as that pivotal person that led them. We use the word led the Bulls.
Yes.
These championships, right?
Yes and no.
Because in his hiatus, they did not win, right?
Well, yeah. Go ahead.
So why would you elect to highlight Scottie Pippen as the leader as opposed to Michael Jordan?
It's an excellent question, and I get it a lot. When Michael came into the league and when Michael got to the Bulls, he was the high-flying athlete, the superstar, he won Rookie of the Year, he won Slam Dunk Contest, he won MVP, but his Bulls could not win a playoff series until 1987, when they hired a little-known player named Scottie Pippen. And when Pippen came in, as sportscasters love to say, Michael was Batman, but Scottie was Robin. And so we really saw that with, as Michael said in his 2009 Hall of Fame induction speech, he said, everybody loves to talk about Michael, but we did not win championships until Scottie came on board. Michael won scoring titles. He won 10 NBA scoring titles. Yeah. 9 of them came when he paired up with Scottie Pippen. So Scottie Pippen became what they needed. I guess, and if you want to look at it in terms of Motown Records, Scottie Pippen became And the Pips. I mean, Michael was Gladys, But Scottie Pippen was that and the Pips.
This episode is sponsored by BuyEmpowered.com. Make Buy Empowered your new favorite brand. BuyEmpowered.com offers high-quality, comfortable t-shirts, hoodies, and more. We want you to dress confidently, feel free to be yourself, and buy empowered. Shop BuyEmpowered.com. And so with it, well, you know, we have these conversations all the time, right? People that talk about, we talk about this whole idea. Was it Michael? Was it Pip? Like, could they do this? Could they have won without Pip? Like, you know, you have this ongoing kind of conversations. This is what we, do. Yeah.
Well, you don't want to talk about that, do you?
Well, with the Lakers, I mean, I feel like the Lakers had a very, very clear and very obvious synergy. Right, being a fan of that Showtime crew, kind of really spirited and kind of led with the energy of Magic Johnson.
Thank you.
You get the sense that it was a whole team, and really the way growing up in Los Angeles in the time, that is the way it was discussed. It wasn't discussed. Of course, Magic Johnson was a star. But the conversation around the team was truly about the team, right? And so what we often have, especially talking about currently in basketball, it's we have this fixation with the superstar, right? It's a superstar and the team, right? So right now we talk about really big, right now we're talking about Giannis and the Bucks. So it's like, and the rest of the guys, right?
Right.
And with Kobe, it used to be Kobe and the Lakers, right? It wasn't, everyone's name wasn't being said as far as their contribution. And so how do we, because the whole idea about servant leadership is that you have someone's identified as a leader, but they are receding this kind of hierarchical perspective when it comes to leading the group and really lifting up and building up the rest of the team, their team members, to take leadership in different areas, right? And so where do you see that in contemporary basketball? What are the examples of that happening? Now, you mentioned Steph Curry with the Warriors, but where else is that happening?
I don't see it happening as much. And as a result of that, that's an excellent question. We're not seeing the dynasties by my model of what a dynasty is. It'll be interesting to see this season, for example, where we have the defending champion, Denver Nuggets, to see whether they can repeat or not. But our media frenzy, our fan frenzy over the Superman kind of mitigates against that. I'm a LeBron James fan. I am. I've been a fan of his since he was in high school. But LeBron, as I say in my book, is not a dynasty player. He has won championships, but by the model, he's not. Now, when he, chances are, and forgive me, gods of the Celtics, for saying this to Dr. Mack, you know, but chances are they may not become dynastic until he leaves and the attention and the ball is more spread out. What I am noticing, and what we're all noticing, is the fact that we place a great degree of emphasis on the hero. But what you know as a leadership expert and as a leadership professor is the fact that the true leadership really happens below the surface. In my book, I talk about the Hindu philosopher Chanakya, and someone asked him, what is more important, the king or the kingmaker? To which he says, anybody can become a king, but a king is only going to last but a certain amount of time. He said, but the kingmaker can make many kings. And to me, that's kind of the example of that probably is more like of that of a Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr played with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen. And after that dynasty ended in 1998, he went then to the San Antonio Spurs, and they won the championship the next year. And he is the only person in history to go from one team, championship team, to another and build a championship team, two different championships, two different teams. He brought that spirit with him ultimately to the Golden State Warriors, and then they began to build a dynasty too. The same could be said about Phil Jackson.
Well, you know, there's a little bit of the Steve Kerr conversation. We can have that a little bit, especially that first championship. But anyway, there's other dynamics there happening with the construction of the team and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, go ahead.
We're listening to a leadership expert here, ladies and gentlemen. So I will sit at her feet to get her analyses. It may be off camera, but I'm going to get it. But there is a dynamic that says to me, and you probably are much more versed in this than I am, Dr. Mack, that I think there's a Chinese proverb that says the power of we is greater than the power of me. And the analogy that I use was Bill Russell coming to the Celtics and Red Auerbach saying to him, "We know you can score, Bill, but we need you to get the ball to scorers." And so he came in with a dimension of the game that no one else had had before, and that was defense. And defense was blocking shots, you know, grabbing defensive rebounds, stealing the ball, and passing the ball to people to score, which are assists. And therefore, that created the Hall of Famers like Frank Ramsey, Bill Sharman, Tommy Heinsohn, Casey Sam Jones, Seth Sanders, and then Bill Russell, and then Coach Red Auerbach. Now, my very first game, Dr. Mack, was when I was 12 years old. My uncles took me to the Boston Garden. Forgive me, the Boston Garden. And and my first game was watching the Celtics, who were defending champions, playing against the upcoming champions, who were the 76ers, featuring Will Chamberlain. Now, what was interesting about that was that Alex Hannum, who had played against Chamberlain in the earlier part of the 60s, became the coach of the 76ers. And as Wikipedia records, Hannum said over a period of conversations with Chamberlain, "Look, everybody knows you can score, but I need you to score a bit less, pass the ball a bit more, and we can win." Chamberlain did that, and the Sixers won the championship that year. And there is a quote, I dug and found a quote by Bill Russell that said, after the Sixers beat the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals in 67, Bill Russell said, quote, "I see Chamberlain has learned how to play like me in order to win." Chamberlain got excited about assist to the extent that the next season, 67-68, he led the league in assists, the first and only center to ever do that. Yeah. But they didn't win. So then he gets traded to your team, the Lakers, you know, and he's there teamed up with Elgin Baylor and Jerry West. And so therefore, the next 2 years, 68-69, he teams with them, but they lose to Bill Russell and the Celtics. You know, then Russell retires. And then finally, in his last year, after Baylor leaves, and Chamberlain's still doing the assist thing, they finally win a championship there because the model has been set. You pass the ball, you create more scorers.
Yeah. You actually quote John Wooden in your book, who happened to be a basketball coach at the University of California, Los Angeles, UCLA. No one calls it by its full name, UCLA. No one calls it by, if you say all the complete name, people are like, where is that? UCLA.
But if you're from Harlem, UCLA, I learned, is the university on the corner of Lenox Avenue.
And so the quote that you use in here says, individuals win trophies, but teams win championships.
Precisely.
And it's a kind of an illustration of your point that involvement of the full team is what makes the difference. If someone that is a great player, like, what does that mean? What's happening in that process? Because really what happens oftentimes is that we defer. When we see someone that is a great superstar, you're using the backdrop of basketball to illustrate this point. But we see, obviously, and I've been in many gyms and watched many teams being coached on various levels. And the whole idea is like, you get it to the hands of the best player. That's what we're kind of trying to, that's the way we're going to win. Let the best player kind of bring it home for us. We're supposed to do everything to support that player. But really, the idea of servant leadership is pushing the inverse, that best player is supposed to, okay, acknowledge, yeah, I think I am the best player, but how do I then kind of involve everyone else in the process, right? It's kind of, you're turning it on its head.
And that was really demonstrated in 2016. In 2015, for example, the Golden State Warriors won their first championship in 40 years. They were coached 40 years ago. They were coached by your fellow alum from North Carolina A&T, Al Attles. You know.
Yes.
And but you know, in 2015, they won first title. They were that next season. They were the cinch to win. They had the best record in NBA history. You know. Steph Curry led the league in scoring, free throw percentage, and steals. He became the first and only unanimously voted most valuable player. And as a result of that momentum, Steve Kerr was selected coach of the year. They were a cinch to win until the last minute and 56 seconds when Kyrie Irving, who I feature in the book for another reason, hit the shot. And they won. So the best team then
became, and Kyrie was with the Cavs at the time.
At the time, yeah. The best team then became number two. This is what touches me. So what happened? The number one team with the number one player, at the urging of the number one player, Steph Curry, he backed up, he backed down, and he who was a number one scoring champ, therefore helped to recruit a four-time scoring champ, and he who was a number two-time MVP helped to recruit a four-time NBA MVP in different categories, and that was Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. And so therefore what happened is Steph Curry backed up, backed down, and as a result of that servant leadership mentality, they won those next 2 years of championships. Mm-hmm. It takes a certain kind of person to be willing to back down to let somebody else step forward. I make the point in the book that it wasn't so much in Steph Curry's head as it was in his feet. In his sneakers is the number 413. Which we know comes from the Bible, Philippians 4:13, that says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. He says that is his mantra. That's what he plays by. And so when there is a player, like you're saying, you're a superstar, you know you're a superstar, but he that is, the Bible says, he that is greatest among you, serve. And so very few in this media craze, contract craze culture of ours are willing to back up, back down, and allow somebody else to score. The name of the game in sports is winning. And the name of the game in competitive sports is scoring the most amount of points. But the most amount of points, I read a statistic that said that roughly 56% of all baskets scored in the NBA are the result of an assist. As opposed to a play. And so that proves the point. And also the fact that it is the, as you well know, as a leadership expert, it is the, I think the rapper Mos Def says, how did the straw break the camel's back? He broke the camel's back because there were a million little straws underneath. And so it is those underneath that create the leaders. I was listening to a game last February of last year, and I heard a statistic that blew me away. There have been 4,782 players in the NBA since its inception. But there have only been some, I think it's like 450 have been all-stars. That's one out of every 10. So what that says to me is it roughly takes about 10 players to make one all-star. Hmm. So that's why I've heard stories of when a player, say in the NFL, will get an MVP award, or let's say, for example, there are some quarterbacks in the NFL who the night before the game, they take their whole offensive line out for steak dinners with their families because they say to them, you're the one that make me go. You're the one that causes me to be what I am, because they understand the dynamic, whether you call it that, of servant leadership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think athletics is a great kind of platform and backdrop for so many conversations. Yes. Right. But with that too, before we kind of, there's also, so we have these exemplars, these people that are able to kind of transcend the sport, right, and become kind of synonymous with these dynasties that you've outlined. But then we have those that struggle with this greatness, right? Where we can all from outside can look at them and say, like, oh my goodness, you have so much potential. You could be so great, but they continue to kind of stumble and don't really, in our eyes, meet their potential.
Yes.
Right. And you discuss a little about that in your book also. Yes. In your book also, if you want to just kind of share a little bit. Sure. About that component.
Sure. One of the people that I point out, there are two people of that caliber that I point out in the book. Well, one, two, and the third person is me from my high school playing days. When people say, are you a ball player? I say past tense. There's Kyrie Irving. There probably is or has been no more dynamic player than Kyrie Irving. I mean, he was the one, for example, that shot the shot that brought Cleveland his championship.
Yeah.
The problem that he had, and he has bounced from team to team to team, mm-hmm. is that he cannot handle or has a history of not handling being number two. And maybe that's mm-hmm. changing now. For example, when he was a 3-year teammate of LeBron James, his sneaker, Kyrie's sneaker, was the second best seller in the country that year, but second only to guess who? LeBron James.
James.
You know.
That's a big shadow, though.
It's a big shadow. But
LeBron is literally a big dude.
Yeah. So. But he had been used to being the star at Duke University. Mm-hmm. He jumped out of Duke and jumped into the NBA, became the first round draft choice, became the rookie of the year, became the 2014 All-Star MVP, but was always playing in the shadow of LeBron. Mm-hmm. So he engineered his trade to the Boston Celtics. And when he got there, he played for a bit, then he got injured. And then he engineered his trade to, you know, the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah.
And then got injured. And then engineered a trade to the Dallas Mavericks, where he is number two behind Luka Doncic. You know, coincidentally, when he was playing for LeBron, he wore the number two on his jersey. And so for those of us who are fans of both sports pages and the Bible, the analogy between Kyrie and Lucifer is powerful. I mean, the Bible tells us in Isaiah 14 that Lucifer was the first created number two being. Lucifer hated being number two. And when we study the Bible, it was when God the Father, God the Son, and the Holy Spirit were in a meeting, as we've learned in commentary, he was not invited into that meeting. He wasn't one of them. And from what we learned is that's what started the strife, the rebellion. And so when he had his resume, I mean, he was the minister of music for a countless host. He had vocal cords and orchestral cords. He was a one-man band. He wore a robe that every diamond, every jewel shone when he flew, but it wasn't good enough. So he ended up getting evicted and fired. And so the parallels between him and Kyrie Irving are unbelievable. Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
When I first saw Kyrie's name, I kept saying, why does this name seem familiar? Why does this name seem familiar? And I kept looking at it and looking at it, Dr. Mack. And then finally it hit me. I had to stop pronouncing it Kyrie and look at the spelling of it. And from my background of being in church and singing in church choirs and academy choirs, K-Y-R-I-E is pronounced Kyrie, as in Kyrie eleison, which in ecclesiastical Latin says, Lord, have mercy. And Kyrie Irving's moves on the court, a Lord have mercy. But on the other hand, his remarks in the public, a Lord have mercy. I mean, in December, November of 2022, he lost an 11-year, $18 million contract because he would not retract anti-Semitic remarks. And so he...
Well, we're his... Well, I don't want to get into that whole conversation about what's anti-Semitic and what's not.
Okay.
And how that's kind of played out in the public's square. Because I don't want to go into that. So while we're not saying Kyrie is not Lucifer, right? He's not that. No. But we're looking at kind of the parallels,
exactly,
and the struggles of someone that is unable to kind of elevate or appreciate how others around them can elevate for success.
And I would, and I would say the same about one of your and my favorite coaches, one of the people that we probably, you and I both agree on, and that's Phil Jackson. You know, I was a fan of Phil Jackson. I wasn't a fan when he was a Knicks player because I was a Celtic, but what he did with the Bulls and with the Lakers, I mean, Phil Jackson, I mean, Bill Russell is the NBA's winningest player coach, but Phil Jackson is the NBA's winningest coach player. I mean, Phil Jackson's won 13 championships. Bill Russell only won 11, you know. And when
he... I said Bill Russell was doing, as you said, he was doing double duty.
Yes.
If people don't know the story, Bill Russell was not just the superstar of the Celtics. He was also coaching at the same time, which is amazing.
It is.
And to experience the success that he experienced wearing both of those hats with the pressure that lies... You know, anyway, so.
No, it was phenomenal. And I'll tell you one story that I read in Sports Illustrated. I'll remember this when it happened. Bill Russell came late for practice one day. Player Bill Russell came late for practice one day. And Coach Bill Russell fined him $500. You know, this was 1966. And so we can imagine what $500 back then would mean now. But Phil Jackson is a key point to me because he is the winningest coach in NBA history. Mm-hmm. But then he gets an offer from the Knicks, his original playing team.
Yeah.
And before that, he tried to press the Lakers to give him double his contract, and they said no. Years later, the Knicks came along and doubled his contract, and he became the president of the Knicks. And he failed miserably at it. To me, why? Because he stepped outside of his lane.
We call it oftentimes the zone of genius, right?
You got to know where your lane is. And so where he then ultimately ended up being successful is coming back to the Lakers and being a coach consultant when they hired, I think his name is Devin Ham, as the coach, because he went back to where he was. And I think the point that I'm trying to make there is the fact you got to know what your lane is. I mean, look at when Michael Jordan tried to come back. You know, no. You know, now he's an owner.
Coming back years later when he was working for the management of the Wizards.
Yes.
That time.
Yeah.
And he said, well, you know, he looked at them and said, I could do better than this.
Yeah.
I mean, and turns out that he couldn't.
We have to know, you and I have to know, and I hope your audience understands this. There's nothing wrong with trying to expand and to excel and to move up, but you've got to know your lane. You've got to know the you that makes you you. And that's why I call the chapter in the book, Knicks and Cuts, The Rise and Fall and the Re-Rise of Phil Jackson. And I also compare it to me in terms of some experiences that I've had when I stepped outside of my lane and failed.
Yeah. Well, I think the book is very interesting, kind of some of these parallels and thinking about it and the way that you've kind of juxtaposed it with, you know, Christianity. Because I think we look at the league as it is now and some of its stars don't seem like they have too much to do with the ideals proposed with Christianity sometimes, and some of their behaviors and things we read in the news on our social media feeds that we get about them. But that's why
I drew a whole chapter on John Morant.
Thinking about him in particular. Yeah. But with your book, where can people get this book? Where is it out right now? How do we get it so we can read all about it?
Chew it up. Well, the book is available on Amazon. However, it is also available on my website, which is timalston.com. If you go to my website and if you purchase a copy, either of the digital or the print copy, you will get it directly from me. But the other thing is, number one, I will also send you free of charge the audiobook version of Where Jump Shots Meet Jesus. And because you purchased it on my website, because of my passion for nonprofit organizations, if you have a favorite nonprofit organization, if you purchase the book or encourage others to purchase the book, and you and I set up a certain promotional code, half of your purchase price, I will donate right back to your organization. So if you purchase the book, say my print book at $15, $7.50 comes right back to that organization. If you purchase the digital book, which is $10, $5 will go right back to your organization. Why? Because my mother and father spent their whole life working in nonprofit, and they educated us. And it's the best way I can say thank you to them indirectly as part of their legacy by helping other nonprofit organizations develop a multiple stream of income and revenue.
That's awesome. I think that's great that you have that. That's a very generous split, right, in there. But who do you think is this book for?
Okay.
Who's the audience for this book? Is it for basketball fans to kind of think about it differently? Is it for coaches of basketball players? Is it for current basketball players? Is it for parents of basketball? Who is this book for?
Well, when I wrote the book, I was fortunate enough to get a testimonial quote from Pat Williams, who is the co-founder of the Orlando Magic. And he said the quote, he says, if you are a person of faith or passionate about sports, Tim Alston's book will speak to you. My goal here, Dr. Mack, is, and you probably have dealt with, you know, we have erroneously tried to separate ourselves into this part of me is sacred and religious. This part of me is secular and non-religious. And that's artificial and it's not biblical. You know, we talk about things jointly. And so I'm appealing to both the person who's passionate about sports, some of whom have no inkling about the Bible. I'm hoping that they will be able to see that there are strong parallels. And my goal is for one day, someone to maybe write that next book, maybe Hockey and the Holy Spirit, or Faith and Football, or Soccer and Spirituality. So we can begin to break down these artificial walls. So if a person typically will ask me, is this book for faith people, or is it for sports fans? And I say the answer is yes.
To both.
Exactly.
Right. All right. So there we have it. We're going to leave it right there. Thank you so much for this conversation, Tim. You do not disappoint with your different ways of looking at things and challenging us with your writing to kind of imagine things a little bit differently than you make traditionally think about them. So thank you so much. Remember, go to timalston.com to get a copy of the book and the possibilities for doing fundraisers. It'd be great for you to do a fundraiser for your athletic teams. If you're a coach out there or for your school athletic teams, reach out to Mr. Alston and see if you can get that going. So thank you so much, Tim, for your time today.
Thank you.
It was a great conversation.
Thank you. I want you to know, Dr. Mack, it pained me to do the research and to come up with the facts. It pained me to be able to give props to the Lakers twice in the book.
As the superior franchise, right? Team.
Obviously, this podcast has gone on way too long. We are both.
And we're going to leave it on that high note with the Lakers being the top.
No.
We're going to leave it there.
The Lakers and Celtics are both tied for 17 championships apiece. As it looks now, we stand arguably a bit closer to breaking that tie and getting our 18th this year. But we will wait and see. And when that happens,
until then,
you will invite me back on your show.
Until then, you have to go now. Thank you so much, Mr. Alston. Take care.
Thank you for joining the journey. I hope you were inspired to lead, speak, and grow today and every day forward. Be sure you follow the Lead, Speak, Grow podcast on your podcast carrier. This episode is sponsored by BuyEmpowered.com. Make BuyEmpowered your new favorite brand. BuyEmpowered.com offers high-quality, comfortable t-shirts, hoodies, and more. We want you to dress confidently, feel free to be yourself, and buy empowered. Shop BuyEmpowered.com.